Welcome in Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. My name's Joe George alongside Jeremy Branham on all social media platforms at Joe George Radio and at Jeremy Branham, talking all things Houston Astros. Today's show is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. It's tequila at its natural, unfiltered best, made with 100% blue agave and totally additive free. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. We got a lot to talk about on today's show. The return of Kyle Tucker and Ryan Pressly to Daikin Park. Their first time as Daikin Park visitors, not Minute Maid Park visitors. Let's talk about all this Jeremy Pena stuff that's going on. Scott Boras, a contract that was in deep talks, and just the latest on how this team's doing so far in June. So Jeremy, we'll start with Pressly and Tucker returning. They don't really miss them, do they?
No.
I think it's like my biggest takeaway from them coming back is the Astros have the best record in June. They've been very good this year. Cam Smith has filled in great in right field for Kyle Tucker. Isak Paredes has obviously been a good move for the Astros. And Ryan Pressly, you have not missed him a single bit from this team. Maybe his entrance. I did like his entrance.
Yeah, God's going to cut him down.
Yeah.
Johnny Cash. Yeah. Everybody likes Johnny Cash.
Yeah, the lights going off and all the flashing lights and everything is great.
I like his entrance. I liked his entrance. I did think it was kind of weird for an eighth inning guy to have an entrance.
He doesn't have one. They don't do it now.
What they did when he was an Astro?
No, but now. So he got rid of it. I think he also realized it was weird.
Did he have an entrance when he started the year as the closer?
I think he did.
Okay.
I don't know if he's the same song, but they don't make at least a big spectacle of it like they did at Minute Maid.
It is kind of funny though, like you're a closer, you get the entrance. You're anything less than a closer, nah. You just come out to like whoever's the organ player, like whatever he wants to play that specific half inning.
I think they have walkout music like batters do. But it's the big dog and pony shows for the closers. You know, Josh Hader has the graphics and everything, and Hader and Pressly had the lights and all of it. I think the starting pitcher should get that too. The start of a game.
I think they do actually.
Really?
Yeah. Well, not the
people are gonna hate us for this then.
Not the intro video.
Oh, okay.
Like not the lights just going off, but they do have like the walk up music. They have their own walk up song.
But the Astros, you know, haven't missed them really either of them this year. The Cam Smithing, I feel like his defense has not been talked about enough. When we've talked about him, how well he has transitioned to right field. Obviously, before Friday's game, there'll be a video presentation for both of them. Do you think they get one video combo? Or are we getting two videos?
I think two separate videos.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to show the one with when Kyle Tucker shatters his shin on that foul ball.
Probably not.
Because he has Chet Holmgren shins.
Probably not. He didn't walk.
Was there a blow-up that like you remember of Ryan Pressly?
Where do you start?
See, I don't – like, is there one specific game where he, like, blew – I don't know if there is.
No,
like,
no, it just got bad.
There was in Chicago, like, this year where he gave up 9 runs, faced 8 hitters, which is always funny. Gave up more runs than hitters faced because of the Manfred man.
It's bad.
But he didn't – I mean, it really wasn't that – I don't remember, like a single signature blow-up moment for Pressly. It was just kind of, like, stressful.
Yeah, oh, that's Ryan Pressly.
I mean, last year. I mean, to be fair to his entire career, he is one of the best relievers in Houston Astro history. So mocking him, yes. But, I mean, I do appreciate everything Ryan Pressly did for this organization. The golden era. Like, if you had to pick one reliever in the golden era of all of them, it's probably Ryan Pressly. So
yeah, I don't know. Who else would you consider? I mean,
not Roberto Osuna.
Nope.
No, I wouldn't consider him. I wouldn't consider 100 Miles Giles. Ken Giles wouldn't consider him.
Nope. Can't be like a Maton.
No, can't be a Maton. I mean, you had some really good years from like Will Harris, but he wasn't the closer. I got to go with Brian. I have to go with Ryan Pressly.
And honestly, I don't think Brian Abreu is far behind that on that list. Probably he's probably next up there from this era of like, or he's working his way towards it. So I mean, what he's doing again this year, he probably won't pass Pressly because he's not going to be the closer of this team ever for the Astros. But
probably not.
But he's been so good in this era since he's come up, basically.
I think there's a better chance for Hader to catch Pressly than Abreu to catch Pressly, just because of the role.
If he wins the World Series and is let's say the Astros win the World Series this year.
Okay,
Hader is dominant in the way that he has been this year. It is a level of dominance that, to be honest, Ryan Pressly didn't reach. Like, even when he was an excellent pitcher for the Astros, he had the name Ryan Pressly. He would put himself in unfortunate situations, but find a way to get out of it. Hader this year is never in those situations unless Manfred puts a man on second base.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like the spots he's gotten hit this year, Hader, whenever they're non-safe situations. Now, the one period of dominance that I think you have to mention when you talk about Ryan Pressly, not his alter ego, Ryan Stressly, was whenever he was on with John and Lance. I thought it was an excellent 30. No, I'm just kidding. It was that the 2022 postseason. He didn't allow an earned run in the 2022 postseason. So, like, in his numbers, postseason numbers, actually rival, like, Mariano Rivera. So I will give him the period of dominance, 2022 postseason, when the Astros needed it the most. I have a lot of love for Ryan Pressly. Yeah, just not his alter ego, Ryan Stressly.
That's where it would be hard for Hader to pass him, is that run where he didn't give up any earned runs in a playoff streak.
He would have to do it.
Like, Hader would have to do the same thing. And even then, it's already been there, done that. So it's, what else are you going to do for me at that point? Because Ryan Pressly has more than just that stretch of baseball, sure, you know, for the Astros. So, but they both come back this weekend. I think we'll. I'm gonna call my shot here. Presley's first. The final highlight of his video is just the final out of the World Series.
Yeah.
In which it goes from his hands into Kyle Tucker's glove, and it transitioned to a Kyle Tucker video.
That'd be hard to do because that would be kind of like rewinding Kyle Tucker.
I know, but you could start it there and then do all your other Kyle Tucker stuff. Huh. He's got so many moments.
I haven't seen. I know that they do it, but I can't say that I've seen the Astros do one of those videos. Like, I'm sure there was one for Correa.
But I've never been in person.
Do you know when they do it? They do it before the game?
They do it before the game. So it'll start, you know, probably if it's like, what, 7:10 first pitch, they'll probably happen at like 6:50.
I think it would make more sense to go through Tucker's highlights, Tucker catch the final out, and then show Pressly celebrate, and then go through Pressly.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, they both deserve it, obviously.
They both deserve it.
Kind of everyone gets... I think too many people get videos these days.
Probably.
I think the Rockets have been a big guilty party of that.
No, I think it's good business, though. Like, it
for
makes
Russell
sense.
Westbrook?
Yeah, take care of players, man. Like, I think that to me is something that goes around the players. Like, they talk, hey, this is an organization that takes care of players. I think it, like, what is it costing you? It costs you nothing. It costs you paying your guy that does the video. You're paying him his check. Yeah. He's already earning that check. So play the video, make the player that isn't even your player anymore happy. Word spreads around the league, and you're an organization that players like. Like, I think it's a good reputation to have as an organization.
That's
and like,
fair.
Does it matter a whole lot? Probably not. But you start going the other way. Oh, this organization never has videos. Oh, this organization doesn't have good chairs in the locker room. Oh, this organization doesn't play. You know, doesn't do business with stars who want to leave that organization, like the Rockets did with James Harden. So, no, I actually think it's smart to do, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Dana Brown said on the flagship radio station this week that he thinks there's a good chance Yordan Alvarez could be back before the All-Star game. He is swinging off a tee, as the Astros put in their game notes. And then he followed it up with, quote, I feel confident that it could be before the All-Star break. Well, what is it? Will he be back or he could be back? Because I feel like that's like not a good answer, that he could be back. What are you confident in then, if he could be back?
I mean, I'm not confident in Yordan Alvarez's availability. I mean, hasn't he proven that to us?
Yes.
That he's not the most available, not an Iron Man. But, I mean, the Astros are trying to be better with how they handle injuries and their communication with the injuries.
It's appreciated.
Look, I mean, Espada, they said that he's hitting off a tee, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, okay, well, I believe that he's hitting off a tee. I don't think they're lying to us that he's hitting off a tee. Espada had a catch with Alvarez the other day, which I think is actually, like, I think that is something. Not like this massive thing. I think it's more of a molehill than a mountain, but it is a molehill. It is something. He's right-handed. Like, he's a right-handed thrower. He has a right-hand break, or did have a right-hand break. So him playing catch, I think, is significant because at least he's throwing, he's testing it. If he's starting the hitting, like, how long will it take him to play in a big league game? You would think that would be before the All-Star break. Now you start to wonder, well, the Astros are currently in the lead in the American League West. They're, like, jockeying for a top two spot in the American League. Is it one of those things where, hey, you know, there's this natural break in the calendar coming up in the middle of July, you know, why don't we, if it's 100%, why don't we make it even more 100%? So that would make sense. And wasn't it a couple of years ago, a few years ago, maybe it was last year of Dusty, or maybe Dusty's second to last, I can't remember. There's been so many Yordan injuries. But didn't they wait to the after the All-Star break for Yordan and one of the hand injuries, and then he came back and was, like, on a tear?
I think you're right. So I mean, it just makes logical sense.
Like, what's the rush, right? Like, you're, and also, like, there's also the inevitability that Yordan might get hurt again. So, like, if you limit the amount of games he plays that you think, you're limiting the, you know, the chances of him getting hurt. So if you can shave off an extra 4 or 5 games at the beginning of the All-Star break, I don't think that there should be a rush. I don't care if he comes back after the All-Star game. Now, if he's not back after the All-Star game, it's like, what's going on?
That's a huge concern.
What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, as we record this, they're 4 games. They have the 4th best record in all of baseball. They're only, 3.5 games back of the Tigers, the best record in the American League. What's the rush? They've been the best team in June without him, without pitchers, you know, multiple pitchers. Like, they just keep finding a way to win. And I know by the time this is over, the Philly series will be over, the Cubs series is coming up, a team that's kind of reeling in a way, but like, this is a tough stretch of baseball in terms of the lineups you're facing. This is a good test for the Astros, what they've done. I think it is fair to say Joe Espada, I don't really understand how they quantify manager of the year. I don't really know like what goes into it besides having a lot of guys that are injured or a team that's below expectation going well above expectation. But I would imagine he's got to be the top candidate this year, him and AJ. And even then, AJ, like with AJ Hinch, the Tigers are kind of doing what a lot of people thought they would.
Yeah, you got to bake in the East Coast bias. That exists. That absolutely exists. Espada is not like this popular name, so that will probably hurt him amongst the voters. Like, the voters are going to vote for like popular names, names that have been around forever, names that are in the East Coast that are more often in the papers and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I view manager of the year, how I would vote for manager of the year is how many games that team has won more than what I would expect them to win. And I think you do have to factor in injury and stuff like that too. Like, if you would have told me at the start of the season that 60% of your starting rotation gets wiped out. Now, it was the right 60% because the two that you kept are the two that you would want to keep. Mm-hmm. But if you would have told me that 60% of the rotation gets wiped out, you kind of have this makeshift bullpen that outside of Hader and Abreu is a bunch of question marks. You tell me that Yordan Alvarez only plays like a month of the season, and in that month of the season he's a worse offensive player than everybody on the team. Yeah, I would expect the Astros to be like fighting to be 500. They're not fighting for 500. They're fighting for one of the top two spots in the American League. So like, I also think it's different between like who deserves the manager of the year versus how good of a manager that guy is.
Sure.
Because I think Espada is a fine manager. I think he's good. I would say he's probably like on the cusp of being a top 10, 15 manager. I wouldn't say he's a top 5 manager. But in terms of the job he's doing this year with everything that he's had to, you know, he's had to wear with the injuries and stuff. I would vote him as the American League Manager of the Year without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly he deserved more run last year to have the injuries they had last season and to be in a division which you're 10 games back in your division. You don't unravel, you win that division. I think he deserved more credit last year, honestly, than he got. So
he finished top 5, didn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
The only pushback that I would have to that, I think he did a great job in the final 130 games. I thought he was atrocious in the first 36.
It was very bad. It felt like there was a real learning curve.
So, like, I think that you have to factor in the entire year. You can't just factor in the final 130.
I mean, that is 90% of the season. Like 80%.
That's not quite.
80%.
I mean, 36 is almost a quarter.
Math. Not great at it.
I mean, the start of the year, people were calling for his head.
Yeah.
At the start of the year, people were like, is he overwhelmed? Should he be the guy that is the manager of the Astros? Fans were ready to fire him after 36 games.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Let's hear from our friends at Blue Star Tequila so they can teach you what night harvesting is all about.
In the highlands of Jalisco, as the fierce heat of day fades into dusk, the sun dips below the horizon, and our jimadores begin their work. Harvesting our precious agave azul beneath the glow of stars, while the night air is cool and calm. Away from the harsh heat of the sun, we protect our agave's freshness, locking in essential natural properties and sweetness, and preserving its unique flavor profile. This world-first practice has been warmly embraced by our jimadores, who relish the soothing embrace of evening's cool air as they work beneath the moonlight. 100% agave azul. Night harvested, unfiltered, and additive-free. We invite you to taste the Blue Star difference.
All right, Jeremy, we've had a lot of conversations. This show, previous shows, on the air, off the air, about contracts, paying guys, and out of nowhere this week we got the news that Jerry Pena had signed with Scott Boras. He joins Hunter Brown, Lance McCullers, Jose Altuve, former Astros, and Garrett Cole, Carlos Correa. A lot of Scott Boras ties to the Astros. My immediate reaction was, well, I thought he was leaving anyways. So I also don't think it matters. Like, I think there's two ways to look at Scott Boras and Jeremy Pena being, you know, his agent. Do you want to be here or do you not?
Yeah.
And it's, if you look at Jose Altuve and Lance and the contracts that they signed, they were a little more team friendly. They didn't wait for a free agency. They wanted that security. They went and got the bag when it was offered to them by the Astros. They thought the Astros deals that were being offered were fair. And then there's Garrett Cole, who I don't think was ever going to come back to the Houston Astros. And you have Carlos Correa, who the Astros made a good offer to and who sat on free agency and then had to go back into free agency, signed two $300 million contracts, and both got rejected by doctors. I don't think it means it's not the nail in the coffin for either Hunter Brown or Jeremy Pena. I know a lot of Astros fans feel that way. I personally don't. I think at the end of the day, if Jeremy Pena wants to be a Houston Astro, he and the Houston Astros and Scott Boras will find a deal that both sides feel reasonable.
Probably. It usually comes down to the player's desire, right? Like you mentioned, Altuve and McCullers, there were Boras guys that stayed here on team-friendly deals. Now, the Astros don't sign players, at least their own, that are on team, unless they sign team-friendly deals. Bregman even signed early in his Astro career. He signed a team-friendly deal, and the Astros were able to buy out two of his free agent years, which was critical. It was massive. Did it with Altuve, tried to do it with Springer. He said no. Did it with Singleton. People freak out about Singleton and then don't bake in everything else.
He's back again.
Who's that? Singleton? Yeah. I mean, he's earning his money. I'm a little bit more pessimistic, I guess, about the hiring of Boras, especially what we learned in the middle of the week after we found out that he signed with Boras, is that the Astros, according to Ari Alexander, approached him early in the season trying to sign an extension. And he even threw out figures. I think it was 105 for five. Mm-hmm. And, like, if he was on the open market, he'd probably be a $25, $30 million a year player. But because he has two more arbitration years, it does bring down that AAV when you do all the math. But why did he sign Boras if he was deep into contract negotiations with the Houston Astros? So the timeline of it is very curious to me. If we believe everything we're reading, which, again, there's always a 10% chance somebody's bluffing. Thank you, Dan Harrington. Ari's telling us that the Astros approached Jeremy Pena start of the year on contract negotiations. Jeremy Pena performs way better than he's ever performed in his life in the regular season since opening day. They got close, according to reports, on a 105 five-year contract, which would buy out three of his free agent years, which is quite a bit. And then something happened when they were close that made him fire his representation and hire Scott Boras. That to me is the biggest, like, why? What if? That to me is like, okay, yeah. Does he think that he's being undervalued by his agent at this point? Towards like, okay, let me go hire the biggest shark in the game that's going to get me more than $20 million a year. Now, to your point, do you hire Scott Boras whenever you're still 2.5 years away from hitting the open market? Or do you hire Scott Boras when you're about to get a contract extension done, but you're trying to optimize the dollar value of that contract? So I don't think it's a, like, okay, this means he's never signing. This is more Jeremy Pena thinks his value is greater than the value that his agent put on him.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's not hard for me to try to come up with easy speculation of what's happening here. I mean, you've got two guys that played to his left and to his right since he came up to the Houston Astros that are with Scott Boras, and Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman. Well, what did Alex Bregman do? He signed a contract and pretty quickly fired his agent after he signed said contract with the Houston Astros and then hired Scott Boras. Scott Boras did not get a penny from that contract because he only is getting paid for what Bregman got with the Red Sox. Clearly, Bregman feels like his agent undervalued him and for what he did. And then all of a sudden, he signed Scott Boras. You got Jose Altuve, who has signed team-friendly deals with Scott Boras, who is going out there telling the Astros publicly that Jeremy Pena is a superstar and to sign him. So you've got Pena, who I would imagine is looking to his left and to his right the last couple of years, no longer on his right with Bregman, but looking at guys that he probably relies on for these kind of things and says, this is what I'm being offered. And maybe they floated it out to Scott Boras. And he's like, that's not good. I mean, as of right now, he is second in Major League Baseball, depending on what website you look at, in WAR. That contract's not good for a player that is putting up those kind of numbers. So to me, it looks like someone that is confident in the way they're playing and thinks that this is the contract that they're worth more than that contract, and also thinks that they're going to play at this level for the foreseeable future. And that's why you bailed, because I would bail too. But, I mean, John Heyman, the way he phrased it, he said they were had been in serious long-term contract talks before his recent agent switch. Now, the only thing I'll say about this is I do feel like sometimes when agents get switched, we don't know right away. I don't feel like we always get a clear and concise timeline of, like, when that happened. Like, did he literally, like, on Monday talk to the Astros, on Tuesday get a call from Scott Boras and, like, dude, that's a bad idea. Like, you probably shouldn't sign that contract.
I mean, it's hard to know.
Exactly.
Like,
so
we have no idea. Like, we have the timeline that the Astros reached out to Peña towards the start of the year, and then we found out that Peña hired Boras sometime before June 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, anything between that and the middle could be, we have no idea.
Yeah. So I don't think it's the end of the world that he signed with Boras. I do think if you were to ask me, and I'll ask you, I guess, who is more likely to sign now that Boras represents them, is it Peña or Brown? I think the answer is Peña.
No, I do too.
I don't think Hunter Brown is, because Hunter Brown is, as great of a season as Jeremy Peña is having, Hunter Brown's trajectory is that of one of the, like, five best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, if you had to bet, like, who is, which of those two players in 7 years is still where they're at currently? Like, Hunter Brown's one of the top five pitchers in baseball, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do we think in 5 to 7 years he's still one of the top five pitchers in baseball? Yeah, probably. Is it more likely than Jeremy Peña being one of the five best offensive players in baseball? I would bet yes. Like, Hunter Brown, I think it's easier to track pitchers, too. Like, okay, here's his stuff, here's his spin, mm-hmm. here's his velo, here's his command. You look at Jeremy Peña, and it's 3 years of offensive mediocrity, mm-hmm. take out the playoffs of his rookie year, and then in his fourth season, like, this breakout to where he is one of the better players in the game. So is it an anomaly? Is it the natural development? I don't know. I think he is playing over his head a bit offensively. I think he's better than who he was in his first 3 years. But, no, I would agree with you. I think Hunter Brown is the bigger commodity than Peña.
Yeah, it wouldn't just shock me if just both of them, when their contracts are up, or they're just gone.
Whether they
walk or you trade one of them away.
I mean, that would probably be the betting favorite, right?
Yeah. Yeah. For, like, if you were to say, if it was, you can bet on both being gone, one staying, both staying. I think everyone, for the most part, would just bet on both being gone. I mean, it's what the Astros' track record is. I am curious, like, when they look at the financial future of this team, if, like, when that starts to play in, like, you do look at contracts that are expiring in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have Fromber coming off the books. You're not that far from Lance being off the books or Yordan being off the books. Like there is money eventually, as you would start to pay Peña or Brown more, money is starting to come off. And you wonder at some point, like, does Jim Crane think, like, okay, I can start to pay some of these guys, and these guys, this other pool that's currently signed, they're all for sure gone.
Yeah, my philosophy is in the minority. I believe in what the Astros are doing. If my criticism on the Astros would be that they should have traded the players they let go sooner. I believe in most of their philosophy. If you can sign a young player that you think is a future starter for your team for the foreseeable future, I err on the side of doing it early. Like, I was banging the table to do it for Cam Smith and to hold him hostage. Hey, you want to be a big leaguer? Well, here's a long-term extension for you to be a big leaguer today. That way you can get rid of all the service time manipulation conversation that we had. I went back because, I'm pro in favor of signing young starters early in their career. I went back and was like, I wonder if I have any receipts on me saying that they should do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found one. Like, I was in December of 2023. That was over a year and a half ago. I said that they should lock up Yiner Diaz, Jeremy Peña, and Hunter Brown because I'm a believer in locking up players early. I think it's better to miss when they're early in their career than late in their career because it's a little bit cheaper, actually. If you think that they're going to be a starter, whether in the rotation, whether a starting position player, you lock them up. Mm-hmm. Like, lock them up. And what happened? Oh, we, you know, if you give Jeremy Peña $18 million a year, because it was different then. It was different 18 months ago than it is today. You give Peña $18 million a year. What's the worst thing that can happen? He's the 20th best shortstop in baseball? Okay. That's not that bad.
And he's great defensively. Like, you at least, like, you knew he was going to be a great defensive player.
He had a baseline of being a really good defender, yeah. And he had the potential of blossoming offensively. But let's say he never blossoms offensively. Like, let's say he's just the player that he was the first 3 years of his career. Mm. Okay, well, he's an above-average shortstop that plays really good defense and doesn't kill you offensively. Like, he's not going to win games for you offensively, but he doesn't kill you offensively. You pay him $18 million a year. So what? Mm-hmm. You paid Jose Abreu $18.5 million a year, and you had to get out of the contract in a year and a half. It's better to miss early in a player's career than later in a player's career. Because early in their career, at least their baseline is a starter with the potential of becoming what Jeremy Peña became, mm-hmm. the potential of becoming what Hunter Brown became. And are you going to miss every now and then? Yeah, you're going to miss on a Singleton every now and then, which cost you a grand total of $10 million for $1 million a year. Not that big a deal. So I'm a big believer in the philosophy, sign players early. If they do not sign early, they don't sign a team-friendly, you know, contract. Because I do think the Astros try with Kyle Tucker. Mm-hmm. I believe Dana Brown, maybe I shouldn't, but I believe that Dana Brown tried to extend Kyle Tucker.
It was too late.
Brian McTaggart reported that they were trying to extend Kyle Tucker when they signed Yordan. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember that because everybody's like, oh, are they going to get Tucker done? Are they going to get Tucker done? And then, like, 3 days later, the Astros agree to a contract extension with Yordan Alvarez. So James Click was trying to lock up Kyle Tucker. Dana tried to lock up Kyle Tucker. So I'm a believer in signing a player early in their career. If they're unwilling to do it, handle it like Kyle Tucker. Take up 5 of his 6 years of club control, get those years, and then trade him going into his final year. And look what the Astros got for Kyle Tucker. Cam Smith, mm-hmm. who you think is going to be here for the next 6 years. Isak Paredes, who has been, you know, maybe not as good as Bregman, but close to as good as Bregman on a much cheaper deal. And I know that injury to Hayden Wesneski happened, but that was a rotation caliber arm. That's an incredible return for 1 year of Kyle Tucker. So if you don't sign them to a team-friendly contract, trade them going into their final year. And if you're not going to get a contract done with Jeremy Peña, you should trade him going into his final year and get a Kyle Tucker-like return. I feel like they missed the boat there with Carlos Correa. Well, what does that mean? Like, what happens if they didn't win a World Series in Carlos Correa's final year? I think they should have done it with George Springer. No, you lessen your chances of winning the World Series. Well, guess what? You won the World Series without both of those guys, and in the final year of those guys, you didn't win a World Series. I feel like that's where they missed the boat. I don't blame them for, like, not paying players because it's a machine. The Astros are a machine, and I care more about the Astro machine than one individual player. Mm-hmm. How do you keep fueling the machine? You acquire young players that are good. What is the best way to acquire young players that are good? Trade the players that are about to leave you for free. So if you like the Kyle Tucker trade, you should be in favor of this all the time.
Especially because they can't draft anyone. Like, they haven't had someone come up themselves that they've drafted in the first round and be a Kyle Tucker since Kyle Tucker.
Well, that's a bit unfair.
I don't think so.
I mean, they haven't had a pick that high since Kyle Tucker.
No, I know, but they're not developing the later round picks like we're seeing other organizations do.
I feel like that's a bit unfair too. I mean, Jeremy Peña wasn't a top. What round was he picked?
No, but I mean, like the first round guys. Like, they're not finding like the first round guys at the end of a draft where that they're not getting that support that you're seeing the Dodgers get, the Braves get, the Phillies get. Like they're missing out on some of that stuff. I think that's fair.
I mean, one, the Astros had a couple of years worth of first and second rounders stripped.
For sure.
Their part in the sign-stealing scandal that everybody was a part of that no one else got punished.
It might be back.
Sign-stealing?
Yeah.
The other part of this, too, is, like, are you only looking at the draft? Like, you're not looking at international signings, the players that are...
Yeah, I mean, specifically in the draft. Like, I'm not... Because we've talked about the international signs. They've been incredible at it for years.
Okay. If you just go around the horn, they traded for Cam, so I guess we're disqualifying him. Mm-hmm. They drafted Jake Myers. Jake Myers is playing, what, top 10 level center fielder? He was a mid-round draft pick. Mm-hmm. Your left fielder currently is Altuve, so I guess he wouldn't be part of the equation. You traded for Isak. You drafted Jeremy Peña.
You did.
So, like, those are two players right now that are playing at the top of their positions that were both Astro draft picks. Dubon, you got via trade. Walker, free agency. We're not counting Yiner. We're not counting Caratini. Fromber, international signing. Hunter Brown. Those are pretty good three draftable guys.
That's good.
Hunter, Peña, and Myers. Mm-hmm. Who else? I mean, Arrigetti. Spencer Arrighetti is going to be back,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, he actually looks like he'll be
Brian
back.
Abreu, I guess, was an international signing. So, like, those are four players that are pillars. And I mean, I hesitate calling Arrighetti a pillar. Maybe even Myers a pillar. But they're doing good contributions. If you have four guys that you drafted, like, how many teams in baseball have mid-round draft picks that are contributing like Hunter Brown, Jeremy Pena, Jake Myers, and Spencer Arrighetti? Not many. I feel like that's not fair.
Yeah, I know. I think the Astros have done a good job of evaluating later round talent. It just seems like the early round talent they're not hitting.
Who's to blame for this too? Are we going back multiple general managers?
Yeah, it's a three-parter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a one guy thing. It's not a Dana Brown thing because I mean, you know, you've had guys you've traded away that also have amounted to nothing. Right? Like Seth Beer amounted to nothing.
That's not fair to say either. How did Seth Beer amount to nothing when you included him in the Zach Greinke
trade?
He amounted into Zach Greinke.
But like the player himself. Like they're not trading away guys that like you're like regret trade. The Cubs are going to regret trading Cam Smith.
They developed Seth Beer to the point where he could be an attractive piece for a really good starting pitcher at the deadline.
He was on the team for like 2 months, wasn't he?
On the Astros?
Was it a year for the Astros?
Well, you can't trade a player within the first few months that you draft them. So, like, he was in the organization for a bit.
Was he?
Yes.
Wasn't Dansby Swanson traded his first year?
No, I think it was the offseason.
Like, into that offseason?
Unless they change the CBA, which I don't think they can. I don't think you can trade them until the first offseason. It used to be a full year. I think now it's the offseason.
Okay.
No, I don't think that's fair. Like, I mean, if you go back to Luno, okay, whenever Luno didn't have the top picks, Correa used Correa's savings for Lance McCullers, you got Bregman, you got Tucker. Like, he had the luxury of drafting in the top 10 every year and had multiple top 10 draft picks, so that's you're going to find guys. But when Luno started drafting at the end of the first round, you saw some misses there. Like, I think he drafted Gray Kessinger. Like, that one didn't work. I would have to go back and see who Click. But Click was the guy that was drafted whenever you didn't have first or second rounders. And if you go to Dana Brown's had, what, two first-round draft picks that he's drafted so far?
Yeah, he has a small
one. One of which is Walker Yannick, who's like, he's performing okay. Let's see what he becomes. And let's keep in mind he's a catcher and he's not supposed to hit all that great. And then the other one's Bryce Matthews, who is getting on the cusp of making the big league team. He might be your everyday second baseman by August, by September.
Very soon.
Now, there's a lot to work with Bryce Matthews. Like, I don't love the strikeout rate. I don't love the home road splits at AAA. That's something that scares me. Wouldn't shock me if he gets traded, actually.
It wouldn't shock me.
That might
either.
Be a hot take. But then, like, they drafted Jake Bloss. Like, Dana drafted Jake Bloss, developed him so well that they were able to get Yusei Kikuchi, who was massive down the stretch a year ago.
No, you're right.
I don't think it's fair to say the Astros have drafted poorly.
Back on this Pena thing real quick. Is there any – I saw some discussions happening on social media, which is a dangerous place to live sometimes, about, you know, Jeremy Pena signing with Boris, Brown signing with Boris. You know, Dana Brown, you mentioned it earlier a little bit with Kyle Tucker – his first press conference in 2023 or whatever it was at this point, he said he wants to sign young talent like the Atlanta Braves. Mm-hmm. Is there any grief to give because that hasn't come to fruition outside of Christian Javier?
Sure.
Because I can't tell if it's just like he said it to say it or it's there's other factors. Like, I feel like you can't put it all. I think he's learned, like, the Astros medical staff to talk less.
Yeah.
I think he has not been as forward about Kyle Tucker's going to be here, and Bregman's going to be here, and this player's going to be here long-term, and none of that's occurring.
Yeah, I think there are receipts to him actually backing that up, though. He did do it with Javier, so there's an example of him backing up what he said. And again, if you believe the reports from Ari, the Astros came to Jeremy Pena at the start of the 2025 season. Mm-hmm. So that's an effort to try to lock up a player who's in the fourth year of his career and in the fourth year of his 6 years of club control. So I do think that there's some evidence towards it. I do think he tried to lock up Kyle Tucker. I think he realized quickly that the price on Kyle Tucker was way too high, and that's why he eventually traded him. So I do think that there's been some proof to him saying that.
I agree.
So I do think it's his philosophy. I think he's waiting too long. I think that you need to be bold and aggressive when you go after young talent that you currently have in the franchise to sign, because it becomes too much very, very fast. And I think Pena is the best example of this. Jeremy Pena 3 months ago probably signs a 105 five-year extension that you were trying to get him to sign. Mm-hmm. He's not going to do it now. Why? Because he has developed and he's outgrown that contract. He's outproduced that offer. If you did it 18 months ago, he probably signs it. And look how great that contract looks. Same thing with Hunter Brown. Yiner Diaz, maybe that's kind of a wash in value. Maybe you're not gaining any value there, but Yiner Diaz is fine as a starting catcher. Maybe he's disappointing some of us offensively, but he's still a starting caliber catcher. So, no, I do give him some I think it is fair criticism towards Dana. Now, there is the unknown. Mm-hmm. Maybe he has tried to do it and hasn't been able to. I don't really believe that because I think if he would have tried to go after Pena 18 months ago instead of 3 months ago, then he's already locked up.
Yeah, I also have a we're going to wrap up here. I do have a small theory that what is going to occur in the next 2 years is part of the reason why the Astros haven't signed any of these contracts. You know, these long-term deals for guys.
Yeah,
I think Jim Crane is a smart businessman. And I think he is going to be pushing the charge to limit contract lengths. I think he is going to be pounding the table for max six-year deals, five-year deals. Like, it's just a gut feeling. The Astros don't go above that number every deal they've signed. Altuve, Bregman, Yordan, they're all within, like, the same amount of years. So I wonder if what's coming, if Jim Crane's like, I'm not going to play the Dodgers game.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play the Braves game. I'm not doing that stuff. And I'm going to be part of the reason why I'm hoping for change when there's eventually a lockout. Just a gut feeling I have.
Yeah, I don't think that those two things are related.
Really?
No, I don't think that Jim Crane's tenure as an owner was looking towards a work stoppage.
Oh, see, I
or
think
anything
he,
to do with the
CBA. I think he's smart enough to where like he knows that like he doesn't agree with it and he thinks it's eventually going to change.
I think it's plus EV that long-term contracts can be given, and you're the one that refuses to do them.
Yeah.
Like, these 10-year contracts don't work.
Yeah.
So if other teams are willing to give 10-year contracts and you're not, and they're losing because of it, why would you vote against what is your advantage?
That's
like,
true.
I don't think that, and plus I don't think that he's operating in like 7 years in advance of like, okay, we think the CBA might change, so let's operate like this for 7 years. I think they're completely unrelated. Like, you might be right on Crane's mindset, but I don't think he's looking at player extensions
as like
in the labor negotiations as any sort of correlation.
That's fair. All right. He's Jeremy Branham. I'm Joe George. This episode of the Inside the Icebacks is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. It's tequila at its natural, unfiltered best, made with 100% blue agave and totally additive-free, smooth, vibrant, and full of character. It's tequila the way it was meant to be. So whether you're chasing championships or celebrating the moment, raise your glass to bold beginnings and taste the Blue Star difference. Find it near you at bluestartequila.com. That'll do it for us. We'll talk to you next week. Peace.